At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
The views and opinions expressed by individuals on the following program do not necessarily reflect those of the network, Guys Guy Radio, and its platforms.
It's Guys Guy Radio. Here's your host, Robert Manny.
Welcome to Guys Guys Radio. This is your host, Robert Manny, welcoming you to the show where men and women can be at their best and everyone wins, Guys Guys Radio. We're here to inform you, inspire you, empower you, and get you to think, feel, and who knows, maybe even act by virtue of the journeys, stories, the experiences, and insights of the guests I bring you each and every week to the show. And once again, this week is no exception. We've got a terrific guest. You're really going to enjoy my conversation. And today we're going to talk about making action films. I've got writer-director Jesse V. Johnson as our special guest today. He has directed over 30 films, most of them in the action genre. He's got a new one just came out called One Ranger. It stars Thomas Jane and John Malkovich. And he's got six more in pre-production with some top-level talents, and I think you're really going to enjoy a conversation because we're going to talk about the One Ranger movie, of course, but we're also going to talk about Jesse's background because he started out as a stuntman, and I like his personal story because he was really, really willing to do anything necessary to get into position to where he could get behind the camera and to make the movies and tell the stories he wanted to tell, and even when times got tough, in 2008, and he couldn't find the work as a director. He got back out there in front of the camera as a stunt person again, and eventually found his way back on the other side of the camera once again as one of the most busiest action film directors working the beat today. And again, he's got 30 films under his belt. He's got six more on the way, and today we're going to talk about One Ranger. And it's about a story about this kind of grizzled veteran Texas Ranger who finds himself involved in an international terrorist plot. He ends up over in London working with a British agent to try to stop a terrorist act that has to do with Big Ben. So very, very interesting story. Jesse's an interesting guy. His personal story is interesting. And I love spreading out the topics and things we cover here on Guys Guys Radio. And really, if you listen to the show, you'll find out a lot of the issues about making movies and how does a director work on a fight scene, if you will. So many action scenes in movies today, and you always wonder, like, how much of this is planned and choreographed, and how do they actually do this and make it part of the story? And you don't want it to be gore, you want it to be woven, you want the action, and some would call it violence, woven into the story, so it's not really about glorifying this stuff, but it's about these are real people and real tough stuff that happens. And when you're telling stories about vengeance and revenge and retribution, you're going to find yourself with some action movies. So there's going to be some fisticuffs and some busted kneecaps and some bullets flying. But on Guys Guys Radio, what I try to do is find guests that have something new to discuss with us and some information to share. So Jesse's going to tell us about his own personal story, how he made it in the business, and also what it's like to direct and work with some big-name actors and tell a great story, and I think you're really going to enjoy our conversation. So really looking forward to it. So let's get to it now. Jesse V. Johnson, our special guest on Guys Guys Radio.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
It's Guys Guy Radio.
Okay, Guys Radio, we're in the interview portion of our show, and today we're going to talk about films, and in particular, action films, with one of the top action film directors working there today. His name is Jesse V. Johnson. Let me tell you a little bit about him. After nearly 30 feature films as a director, and another several dozen credits as a stunt performer and coordinator on major Hollywood blockbusters, Jesse Johnson is wrapping up work on no fewer than three features to be released this year. And he's got six, I believe, in pre-production. We're going to talk about a movie I saw the other night, which is coming out, called The One Ranger, with Thomas Jane and John Malkovich are in it. It's a period action. He's also got, a period action adventure, Boudica, with Olga Kurylenko, who's been in Quantum of Solace and so many other movies that are coming out now. And also he's got a CIA spy thriller, Chief of Station, again starring Olga and Aaron Eckhart. And he just continues to bring new life, energy, and imagination to the tricky world of action-oriented filmmaking. Jesse grew up in the UK, fell in love with the cinematic art form through watching great Westerns and classics that gave him a unique sense of storytelling possibilities using some of the templates from the American West. Jesse says, my heroes are John Ford, Sam Peckinpah, Anthony Mann, Bud Budicher, and their films reflect characters pushed to the very limits of their endurance, universal themes, and they're timeless. And this can be seen in the movie I saw the other night called One Ranger, featuring Thomas Jane as a modern-day Texas Ranger who's recruited by British intelligence to stop a potential terrorist threat in the UK. So welcome to Guys Radio, Jesse V. Johnson. Forgive me for the long intro, but your work is fantastic, and you've got so many films that you've done and then you have set up. It's just amazing. So congratulations and welcome to Guys Radio.
Thank you for having me, Robert. Very, very honored to be here.
Well, let's start. Let's get right to it. So you've done over 30 feature films, including White Elephant with Bruce Willis, which I recently saw, Debt Collectors, Avengement, Hell Hath No Fury, many, many more. But you began as a stunt performer. So tell us about your transition, if you will. How'd you get into the stunt work? And then how did you get behind the camera?
Very, very simply and sort of rather craven story, to be honest. I started as a PA, like everyone did, an assistant to the assistant to the assistant, making cups of coffee. I learned that to make bad coffee was the best way to get out of making coffee and move forward and get onto the floor. But I did some very big shows. I was desperate to be a director, you know, from the get-go. That's all I wanted to do. I wanted to make my own films. I was obsessed with directors as a young man, obsessed with, you know, the sort of Ray Harryhausen and Ridley Scott of everything, and wanted to do that. You know, putting that into practice without film school, with, you know, I it's a long time ago when I started. I'm 50 years old, so it's incomprehensible now. But there wasn't really the same kind of route to making movies that there is now. There wasn't really an industry to speak of in the UK. Though, you know, the films that were coming out of the UK when I was young were sort of, you know, old country houses and people from the 1800s, and it was Merchant Ivory, and it was very much the kind of, I have a respect for those kind of films, but they were not the films that I wanted to make. They were not the films that I wanted to watch and my friends wanted to watch. So I felt like an anathema in the UK. I worked internationally as a assistant director because that's the best way to get into movies. Everyone wants an assistant director. They don't get paid much and they do everything, so that's a high turnaround. So I was able to sort of talk my way into doing that. I got a bit of a reputation for being able to take on big crowd scenes. It was something I enjoyed doing. I saw the creativity in taking these crowds of people and make it interesting in the background, and then also having to match the continuity. So the crowd has to be in the same place as the actors are passing their mark and saying their dialogue, so that when the cameraman changes lenses, the editor can then cut it together and it all sort of matches. So you'd watch very carefully. You'd have headsets, and it was a very integral part that they actually let someone who's an entry level position taking control of. It's one of those strange sort of things, and you're paid almost nothing, but it's an enormous responsibility. On Shawshank Redemption, I think the biggest day we had was something like 2,500 extras, but it was averaging around about 100 a day. And that's a lot of people. You got to get them through the works, makeup and wardrobe. So you're dealing with the logistics of production. You're dealing with the creativity and the communication of being a director, as you're matching them in the background and talking to them, making sure they understand you. And then you're getting them off the clock early and getting them through the works and on the bus home, back working with your production hat on. So it's a fabulous way to learn filmmaking. It's not a great way to learn directing, but it's a great way to learn filmmaking. It's a misnomer. You should really be called an assistant director, not an assistant producer, not an assistant director. But it's a great thing to do. And I did that for quite a few films, How to Make an American Quilt, Mortal Kombat, where we had 200 or 300 extra, martial artists, Mr. Holland's Opus, which was set in schools, mm-hmm. In the 60s. Yeah. So we took over school in Portland, Oregon for the summer and had, between 60, 80 and 200, 300 extras. It's a very good way of learning, but very rapidly I was realizing I was running out of money because it pays terribly. And if you want to write and you want to direct, you have to take meetings and you have to have time off, writing it. I wrote scripts in the evenings, but then I found I wasn't sleeping, So what I was doing, I was also signing out the stuntmen. I was realizing what these guys were making every day, and they were making in a day what I was making in a week before they'd even done a stunt, before the stunt adjustment, the bonus is added. That's their base rate was the same as more than my weekly rate, and they were getting health insurance and pension and residuals. And it's like, I'm working like a dog. I'm sleeping 3, 4, 5 hours a night. Falling asleep, over my breakfast cereal, going to sleep fully clothed because you don't have time to do anything as an assistant director. I'm very, very sympathetic to them now when I work with them. But I did that, and it's like, this is ridiculous. And I want to become a director, and I don't see the way of breaking this mold and getting to the next level. So I jettisoned. I became a stuntman. I got into the union through my own means and hung my shingle out as a stuntman. I trained for that in the UK. I'd been a cadet and a martial artist and all that sort of stuff, rode motorcycles. And so it wasn't too difficult to also knowing what's required of them on set very intimately as an assistant director. It was not enormously difficult to revisit those disciplines and get back into that. The martial arts was difficult because you leave that for a few years, you come back, it hurts, and it's you don't bounce quite the way we did, but it was fun. And I got back in and stunts were very good to me. It was a very, very good position to be in. It was a great place to watch the greatest directors working. I was honored. I have been very lucky to work with some of the best in the game, watch how they deal with scenes, with problems, with actors, which are all very similar. And also gave me time to write in between gigs because the bills were paid. And I could write and I could take meetings and I could do all those things that require becoming a director. It's extraordinarily difficult. It's very competitive now. It's not even a case of hanging a resume out and saying I'm a director, here's my resume. Even at my humble level, we're making pitch decks, which takes 2 or 3 days of working with a graphic designer. We're making sizzle reels, which means working with an editor. To get a job can cost $7,000 to $10,000 just to create your online ideas for that film and get in there. So it's a tricky, and you're up against kids at film school who have that, have very, doing all that themselves or getting their friends to do it pro bono. So it's, and you can't say that's not fair. You just have to literally throw your hat in the ring and say, okay, I'm going to do that too. I'll do whatever it takes. And so it's expensive and it's time consuming to get projects off the ground, to convince someone to trust you with $5, $10, $20 million and more. So stunts was the perfect thing. It was fab, and from a purely craven mercenary point of view, it worked. But also from a a cerebral point of view, it was very good as well, because as a stunt coordinator or a stunt man, you're talking to an actor and you're winning their trust. You're talking to them like a normal person. You can't be nervous and say, "Oh my God, I grew up watching you on TV. I don't know what to say. Can I take a quick selfie with you?" This kind of attitude will get you off the film very, very quickly. You'll be done. you'll certainly be swapped around before lunchtime. You know, the actor will have a quick whisper to the producers. Bam, that's the end of that. So you have to talk to them in a particular way. And people say, "Oh no, just talk to them like they're anybody." You can't talk to an actor like they're anybody. That will get you switched around eventually in a couple of days as well. it's a specific way. Yeah, there's a famous, you know, there's a sort of saying amongst filmmakers that you know, the lead actor wants to be talked to like anybody, right up to the point that you talk to him like anybody. He'll say that. He'll say, "Oh, just talk to me like it," you know. But there is a particular protocol that's in place, a deference that you have when you talk to these guys, but it's not fanboy, it's not giddy, and then on top of that, you're giving them information that may keep them safe, may save their life, and so you have to be firm. You know, yeah, you want to, you know, hit the three guys with the sword because it makes you look tougher, but if you hit that third guy, there's a bomb going off behind him and it's going to blind you. So, and you have to be firm enough and understandable enough and be able to communicate that to him, that he understands, even though his ego wants him to hit the third one and he's used to getting everything he wants on set, you've got to keep him safe. So that's a long answer to your question, but stunting for me was a phenomenally good way to learn the basics of talking with actors, which is directing. That's what it is at the end of the day. It's not choosing camera angles. It's not storyboarding. It's not being a whiz with how much film history you know. It's how well you communicate with those magical, delicate, sensitive souls we call actors. Okay, and the third fantastic thing about stunting was that I got to work with these fabulous directors and watch them. In one period of a year where unfortunately I had to go back to stunting because, you know, the 2008 stock market crash wrecked my finances. And I had to ask for my stunt pads and bag back from someone that I'd given them to make that awful telephone call. Do you mind if I could borrow them back? But in that year, I worked with Steven Spielberg, P.T. Anderson, and Kenneth Branagh. And although there was a conflict going on inside me, which is, you know, I've had to go back to being a stuntman and put knee pads on and hit the ground and work out in the gym every night, I was working with these incredible talents. And I was watching what they were doing with the scene, how they're approaching the producers, how they're approaching putting the scene together, what their priorities were, which were always performance, 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 not getting the script done, not getting it done quickly, not how can we get out of this as quick as possible? How can I assert my ideas onto the cast? Always performance driven, and that's why their films are so wonderful. And I walked away from that with a new lease on directing as well. And I think if you look at my directing, yes, up to 2008 and then from 2008 onwards, there's a very, very clear difference in quality, because I was an indie director who was desperately trying to make the budget work and pleasing the producers, which really pleases no one, because all they want is a good movie. If you say I brought it in on time but the movie stinks, they don't call you again, right? So there's always that little bit of tension, and it's working. It's how do you color within the lines without being a complete pariah? And then the films after 2008, which I think were, you know, performance driven, character driven, story driven, and so it was good for me. It's a wonderful place to start.
A fantastic answer, so thank you. My special guest on Guys Radio, the action director extraordinaire Jesse V. Johnson. I think you put into context a lot of why your work works so well, because watching One Ranger, your latest movie, the other night, I found the action sequences, I could feel the punches that the lead character, Thomas Jane, was getting. That felt real. And we could go down the rabbit hole on stunting. I have one question about that before we move on, but I want to talk about the new movie and some other things. But just for our audience, when, let's say you have a fight scene coming up, from a director's perspective, an actor's perspective, and the stunt person's perspective, what is the interaction between those three before you shoot the scene?
For me, I sit and I talk with my coordinator an awful lot, and my choreographer, and I explain what I want, what I don't want. What I don't want is usually to look like a chop socky movie. I don't want this to look like a, you know, Chinese kung fu movie. There's too many people who do that, where you see a movie and you have the fight scenes, and they look like they're directed by a completely different person. The cameras are changing. You look at, you know, they're being motivated by the wherever the kick or the punch is landing, or, which is fine, which is great. And there's a certain type of movie does that. They're called B movies, B with a capital B. In the old days, people loved B movies, but if you do that and you decide you throw your hat into that particular arena, your film will never transcend a particular mark. And I see them more and more, and you know, and it's almost becoming okay to do it now, but it is what it is. So my conversation is with the coordinator, the choreographer to start with. I'll talk with the actor. Quite often they have their own opinion of what they want. I've had actors say, I don't want to do anything dangerous. You take my stunt double, you make me look great. I'll throw the first punch and I'll pick him up afterwards and shake him after he's knocked out. And then you have other actors, the younger ones, the tougher ones who work out a lot and, you know, do a little bit of martial arts. And they say, I want to do everything. I want to do everything. You know, I don't be in there like Tom Cruise and I'm going to do it. I'll do the training. I'll do what it takes. And my job as a director is to say, yeah, fantastic, that's great. And I go to my stunt team and I say, okay, this guy wants to do everything. What's it going to take to train him up and make this work? And the coordinator will usually say, look, it's going to be a week, it'll be 2 weeks, it'll be a month of training, depending on the fitness levels, the technical expertise of that particular actor, and how big we want to go with the fight scenes, you know. And so each one is slightly different. At that point, I take the actor and I usually try and introduce him myself. So I establish the hierarchy that I'm the boss, because things get a little strange sometimes. And I take him
it's for their own good.
Absolutely. Oh yeah. Napoleon said it's better to have two bad generals than one, one bad general than two good ones. If it's, right. You need that chain of command. Correct. So I'll go, I'll talk through with the group. We'll have a little bit of a chat and then I'll leave. They'll start working on the choreography of the first one. At the end of that day, usually the actor will call me up and say, dude, this is really hard work. I didn't realize. You know, or this is wonderful. I absolutely adore this. You know, let's keep it going. And then I'll base my communication with the choreographer. They'll film it. They'll edit little previews together for me. I'll give my notes. And usually by the end of the week, 10 days, 2 weeks, there'll be a previs, which is like a video rehearsal of what they've, you know, as close as possible to what that fight will be. Including the camera angles, because honestly, that saves a lot of sort of headaches. But a lot of the time on a fight, if the choreography is known, it's trying to work out where to put the camera, where the hits will look good, and you can lose precious time on set doing that. And it's nonsensical in this day and age where it's very quick to shoot and edit a little, you know, of stuff.
I'll tell you this: after watching One Ranger, one of the things that stood out for me, it's a good story because it's a grizzled Texas Ranger, and he ends up kind of fish out of water into London with a British agent, and together they have to foil an IRA terrorist. And so great storytelling there. But the action sequences were so real. Again, I could feel the punches that the lead character was taking, and you shot them seamlessly, where you felt as the audience, you were right there in the room, particularly when Thomas Jane was fighting kind of the henchman of the antagonist. And they had three battles, each one escalated in terms of the amount of what was at stake there, and leading to kind of their climactic final fight. But great job with that. And I could tell as a stunt person and somebody who's been through this, you knew how to direct the actors to get the best performances out of them. As part of that, nowadays there's a lot of action films out there, and there's a fine line, and please take this with due respect, between action, and you get to the point where some movies are now gory, either like a Deadpool where it's over the top, or you take John Wick 4 where it's kind of nonstop. What is your action falls right in line, integrates perfectly, in my opinion, with the stories. How do you determine how much is enough and how much might be too much in terms of the action as part of the story and the film?
I think you nailed it. You answered it with your own very astute question, which was it's story driven. So if this character in the, you know, for example, Ranger Tyree, who's supposed to be this grizzled lawman, who's not necessarily the greatest trained martial artist,
right?
per the book, he's been trained obviously by law enforcement, by the Texas Rangers. So he has a very good understanding of physical interaction with another aggressive male. But what he has, what he possesses, and what I wanted to show the audience was he is that fritter that just doesn't give up very easily. There's, you know, he just, once he gets a hold of it, he holds on. And I find that interesting. And so his character reflected that throughout the whole thing. We talked about this, and it was important for the fights to be to the point where you thought, this guy's going to need to be in traction. He's going to need if he keeps getting pounded, you know, by this human locomotive played by Jess Louder. And that's what I wanted. I wanted it to be just borderline.
Yep.
This guy's going to go to hospital. There's no way you can go any further than this. And I wanted it to look like what was bringing him back each time was intestinal fortitude, just the sheer will, not only to live, but to overcome. And I've seen it in people. I've seen it in stuntmen. I've seen it in athletes. I've seen it in soldiers who you count them out and you say, there is no way this person is coming back from that. No normal person would come back from that. But you see him lift themselves up. And it comes down to who's got the biggest, you know, fight in the dog, you know, and it's something there. And I find that interesting. I find that fascinating. And I thought it would be fun to make a film around a character, in this case, a lawman who just didn't give up when he believed something was right and he owed someone's family because he'd let someone down. He was tenacious. He wasn't necessarily book smart. He was very street smart. His understanding of human nature came from a very basic black and white upbringing, and he you know, and it was a it was the battle to get to move the world to what he felt it should be, and I thought that's rather cool. So to answer your question, the fight scenes needed to be long to the point of almost, oh come on, it's not going to keep going, because that's what we needed to tell the story of.
Yes, they were.
In other cases, you know, and I'll take another person's film, something like Hard Times, you have this huge buildup where the other character's making fun of Charles Bronson in the bare knuckle ring, and he takes his shirt off. And at that point, the other fighter's like, oh, maybe he's not quite the old man we thought. But still, he's very cocksure. And they ring the bell, and Charles Bronson hits him once, and it's a knockout. And it's wonderful. And it worked beautifully. And the fight scene was probably one of the best fight scenes in the movie, but it's a single punch that knocks the guy out. And you realize that so much of action is not necessarily the visceral, fast-cutting, loud noises, but the build-up to that. Everyone talks about Bullet being the greatest car chase movie. The car chase itself is okay. It's an incredible half-an-hour build-up with the seatbelts, with Robert Duvall watching from the taxi, with the other guys, with the build-up, with them, you know, reappearing and then disappearing from the rearview mirror. This is what makes the car chase, when it finally arrives, so exciting. So in answer to you, how long does the sequence need to be before it's too long or too short? It's purely driven by the story for me always. I personally think it's rather fun in this day and age to give people a lot. I watched John Wick, the last one. I wasn't a terribly big fan of the other sequels, but this last one with my friend Scott Adkins in, I thought was so adherent to this universe that they created. I found it boring for the first 40 minutes and thought the acting was terrible. But then something happened where you realize they're leaning so heavily into this make-believe world where fights just go on and on and on, and another person comes and another person comes, that I ended up loving it. I thought it was a great gag, a great comic movie. You know,
it's amazing what they did with the John Wick, in that, you know, the first story was a story about, you know, somebody kills the guy's dog and it's vengeance. And from there, they have created this fantasy kind of martial arts world where, and has taken over really the story itself. And they've done an amazing job in terms of creating cinema, what your palette is for the amount of violence and how that's presented. That's an individual,
taste. They're very smart in that everything is CG. Every single blood is CG. Every muzzle flash is CG. Mm-hmm. And most of the stunt, you know, the horrific stunts, something goes wrong with the character. And you can see it's a cartoon character. Even my 8-year-old kid, you know, they look at it and say, no, it's cartoons. So there's a palatability to the adherent violence. They never gloat on it, which, you know, makes it almost comic book. Mm-hmm. You know, you have one stormtrooper dying after another, so to speak, because they're faceless hordes of nobodies. And this is okay. This is like kids' movie stuff. You're not making anything here that's going to, you know, profoundly move you or affect you. This is not Hemingway filmmaking or right. Hawkins okay. or John Ford, but that's okay. It's fine. Okay. It's a different, it fulfills, you know, a different role, and cinema has many roles to fill. But with our film, we wanted obviously that same audience, but we're trying to give them a little bit of a storyline with Thomas Jane and his sort of background, and the fact that we have a terrorist who's sort of having second thoughts about what on earth he's doing.
Let me ask you about the story itself. Again, my special guest, Jesse, terrific director, action director in particular, Jesse V. Johnson is my special guest on Guys, Guys Radio. A lot of the directing and writing is about choices. How did you make the choices in terms of the Western, the grizzled Western veteran, the British agent, as well as the antagonist, which is in this case an IRA terrorist, if you will? That seemed I was fascinated by that because the movie takes place in Texas, Mexico, London, and then back to Mexico again. And I was wonder why Jesse picked the IRA guy instead of, you know, usually have the Middle Eastern bad guys and all of that is so typical. It was very atypical. It was almost like a throwback. I'm like, oh, I didn't think that would work, but it works because obviously the point of where the terror could take place is in London. How do you make your choices, and how do you make these choices of bringing these three characters together?
Well, the English cop was the English cop, and I wanted that to be just a very, very professional English law enforcement agent that could work. You know, she colors within the lines and is a little more straight laced. That was the relationship I was least sure about going in. I met the actor, and she had a lot of ideas and brought an awful lot to it. And I thought that worked on its own sort of merits, and I thought she was extraordinarily good. Really enjoyed working with Dominic. The more interesting, to be honest, in terms of the writing of the piece, was the Irish terrorist or ex-Irish terrorist. And the reason I felt that would be interesting, I always like it when a bad guy and a good guy are quite similar and had something differently in their childhood. They might have taken the other's route. And I found that a lot with a lot of the law enforcement I've talked to, a lot of the professional criminals I've talked to. You know, there was that point, maybe, you know, at some point where they said, I was actually interested in maybe becoming a full-time soldier or going into law enforcement or doing something like that. But eventually, you know, there's a reason they can't. The record is too awful, or the money they're making is too seductive. But with the IRA, it's not about money. It's about patriotic integrity, and which isn't so dissimilar to the Texas Ranger, who's following a codex of, you know, yes, they follow the laws written, you know, Constitution, American law, but there's also a codex to which they follow, which is as old as the frontier of the West, which is slightly more interesting to me, which involves having to wear, you know, a belt set up and a pair of pants and a cowboy hat. Although it's quite a strict list, they're only allowed to choose from two different types and manufacturers. It's still a uniform that you would, if they stepped out of the 1880s, you wouldn't think that they were out of place, you know what I mean? It's 100 years old, so their codex is inherently mythical, and the IRA soldier's codex is inherently mythical. He's talking about an Ireland for Ireland, which hasn't existed since the 1600s. You know, when the English, you know, sent all those Scottish over there, you know, that you know, and the north of Ireland became basically Protestant. You know, so. To say I want a united Ireland is as anachronistic and problematic. You know, it's been that way for almost 400 years. It's not something you flick your fingers and you take the Queen off right. their money. It's a very, very complicated thing. And a lot of these guys were very, you know, who were in the IRA were very complex individuals. You know, they were there not necessarily because they saw an end in sight, but because they enjoyed causing a ruckus. And I like.
Forgive that. Me for laughing, but
no, I think it's as noble a cause as any. You know, you just want to be an irritation to an empire, and what a noble cause that is. I think it's brilliant. You know, there is no real end in sight. We're just going to keep blowing things up and shooting and kidnapping and doing whatever we can and thinking of as many ingenious ways of getting weapons into our little island as we possibly can. And I find something extraordinarily romantic about that. There's a bloody-minded part of me which thinks that's pretty incredible. You look at someone like Brendan Behan, who was one of the greatest novelists. You know, he was a child soldier with the IRA. He got caught trying to set a bomb, you know, when he was 16, and then became this wonderful writer. It's the lost cause of romantics and right. You know, Luddites and individualists. And I think that's not too dissimilar to the American West in many ways. You know, it's the home of romance. You know, the American West as we see it now didn't really exist. It was an extraordinarily rough, dangerous place, racist beyond all description. You know, and hard. You know, you're it's more Cormac McCarthy than it is.
Yes, it's very mythical though. That's become part of the American
way. To be honest, and so I found these two backgrounds very interesting, and I wanted to inbred each of the characters with that, so that when they met, there was almost a sort of respect there, you know, and so that was my reason for going with the Irish bad guy. I thought there was something, you could have pulled him from anywhere. You could have pulled him from Latin America. You could have pulled him from one of those. Right.
Okay, could there be a sequel to this? Because I thought the character, as I watched the film, I found the performance of Thomas Jane got stronger and stronger. At first, I was like, oh, that's Thomas Jane. And like, oh, he's trying to be a Texas Ranger. And then I quickly forgot that once he got into the action, I'm like, I was completely sold. And I thought he did a terrific job. And by the end, it was like, wow, this is like a new character. I would watch a TV series with him. Any thoughts on continuing with that character?
We screened this film in Dallas, which is very nerve wracking for me because sure. Obviously, you know, I had done a TV show there called Walker Texas Ranger back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Where my interest in the Texas Rangers was initially fired. I'd read an awful lot about them, and it was very nerve wracking to show it to a theater audience at the festival there. They're all Texans.
Sure,
they loved it. They thought it was fantastic. They wanted a sequel. They thought they said a similar thing to you at first. It was like, is he making fun of us? And then slowly, as they realized it was the conviction was there and the character, yes. He lent into this so heavily, they got into it. And they said, no one really speaks with quite that heavy an accent in Dallas. You know, they may do in some of the outlying sort of West Texas towns, but certainly it was something we knew and loved and liked, and it felt familiar. And,
right.
So they liked it, and that was fun. There was a lot of talk of, a sequel for a little while. Lionsgate are interested. We'll see. My desire has always been to challenge myself with filmmaking, to go where I'm nervous, to go where I am uncomfortable, and sometimes fail, and they're okay. That's all right. Sometimes you hit. You're never quite sure when you're on set of an independent movie, not a big movie. There's a guarantee of 50 to 100 millions in publicity and advertising. People are going to see this film. It won't be a complete disaster, although I did do a few of those too. But on an indie movie, you don't have that blanket. This film is going to have to succeed or fail on its own merits. There will be no great publicity and advertising insurance policy. You know, you are going out there and it'll either, get tossed or not work against you, or work against you. It may stop you getting hard ever again. You know, it's a terrifying proposition. And I like doing that. I find it wonderful, exciting, and for me, doing a sequel is a tricky thing. I was talked into doing a sequel to a debt collector movie, one of my own films, and I quite enjoyed it. But it was a very difficult process for me writing and rewriting that script to the point that it felt like it was something fresh and wasn't simply retreading what I'd done before. Which is not only dangerous artistically, it's toxic for a creative person. Sure. You go from being a creative artist to being someone who is stamping out molds of cookies, to hand out. And right. you think you figured out what is people like. And so now you're just going to keep to that. And that's terrible. That's the kiss of death. And so for me to go back and do a sequel at this point, we'll see.
That's a great perspective. Now,
yeah, I loved TJ working with him, and I really liked the character. I lived that character for a long time. It took me a long time to find financing for the film, but it would have to be a bigger budget. It was a very difficult film to make, this one as well. Right. It was short.
The name of the film, folks, is One Ranger, starring Thomas Jane. And you remember him from Hung and from, I don't know if he played Mickey Mantle, Roger Maris, though. And he's been in a lot of great stories out there. And great job by our special guest, Jesse V. Johnson. Now, Jesse, you've worked with a lot of the same folks over and over again. Let me list the ones I wrote down. John Malkovich, Scott Adkins, Olga Kurylenko. You've got a couple of films coming out with her. Aaron Eckhart, I think you worked with him before. And you also worked with a previous guest on Guys Radio, one of my favorites, Eric Roberts. How do you choose, how do you get involved with the casting, and why do you go back to some of the, to the same actors? And what do you like about these folks that I just mentioned?
I did five or six projects with Eric. I really enjoyed working with him. That was very early on in my career. And I just loved his take on the world. One of the key parts of being a director, you know, and if you talk to, read anything on John Huston, he said 80% of directing was casting. You know, so you take an inherent risk every time you work with a new actor, especially if they are the leading man or the leading woman or the supporting actor. So it's a huge risk to do that. And if you know someone has the capability because you've worked with them and they can do great work and they understand you, and there's a shorthand between you that allows you to push harder into that realm of, you know, I wouldn't have been able to make, you know, Avengement, which was the film that got me repped by Gersh and got me international recognition. I would never have been able to make that film had I not worked with Scott Adkins previously on Debt Collectors, Accident Man, Triple Threat, Savage Dog, Pit Fighter. Those, you know, these films, I learned, you know, we learned each other's weaknesses and strengths, and where he can push me, where I can push him, where I fall short and he offers suggestions, where he falls short and I say, careful, you're shouting again, you know, keep it down. And you know, these sort of things are wonderful. And if you can keep that process going, you keep it going, man. It's a great thing as a director. But then having said that, it's also wonderful to have fresh energy come in, and you can sometimes work out when you meet a person, but you're never quite sure what they're like till you're on set. An interesting thing. Olga Kurylenko, I had the privilege of working with on White Elephant. Very briefly, I had her for about 10 days on that. It was a very challenging role with a lot of dialogue. She was jet lagged. She was coming in from Russia. On the first day, it was around 4 o'clock in the afternoon. She looked at me and said, I haven't slept in 2 days because of the driving. What have you got? What drink or energy drink or coffee concoction have you got that can keep me going? Because I just want to keep doing this and do the best job for you possible, Jesse. And this is an international actor, you know, who has no problem working. She has a huge following. She makes a lot of money, a lot more money than I do on movies. But this is someone coming to me saying, I'm going to do whatever it takes to give you your performance. Tell me how I can do that. And this is fantastic. And I realized, you know, she's got this blue collar kind of like, just get down to it, work. Let's get it done. And Scott has that too. Let's get it done. Let's make the movie as best as we possibly can. And I love that. And when I find people who have that motivation, and their motivation is purely to make the best possible film with the best characters in it, and to do the best possible performance on their part, I realize I found a collaborator, you know, a willing co-criminal, you know, and we can get out there. And you it's at that point you feel extraordinarily powerful as a director. You feel like you can take over the world.
She's terrific, because I don't think you know, she was in Quantum of Solace, and she was kind of like the pretty face in that one. But she's really come on as an actress. She's very good. And because she's so beautiful, I don't think people appreciate her skills that much. I just saw her in a streaming movie with Don Johnson called High Heat. And she's a Russian who has she has her own French restaurant. And she more than held her own, not only with Don Johnson, but in all the action scenes. She was fantastic. And I think she's going to be a superstar. What's your take?
I was so impressed with her that I had a project that I've been working on for almost 20 years called Boudica, which was the English warrior queen, Celtic queen, who was the first person to join together all of the British tribes to fight against the Roman colonists of the time. It was, 2,000 years ago. It was an incredible story. Every English schoolboy knows, school kid knows it. You know, we have a statue of Boudica next to the Houses of Parliament by Big Ben. She was an incredible, incredible woman. And I had this script, and Olga came in and played that role, and she kills it. I think it's one of the greatest performances ever. I think she's wonderful in it. Right. So as far as I'm concerned, she walks on water. I think she's great. I did, I, I had her in the CIA movie in Hungary, and she plays a Polish agent for me in that one, of those, you know, firing machine guns and swinging through porthole cabins and doing an amazing stuff and fighting people. She's terrific. You know, quite often she'll come to me and say, can I play a role where I don't have to have a scar on my face? Or she says, can I get to wear a pretty dress and have my hair done really nicely on this one, Jesse? And I'm like, yeah, we'll try and get that one for you.
Well, speaking of that, Jesse, you've done it all. We're getting short on time, but I want to ask you a couple of more questions. But in terms of genres, you are the king of action films now. Is there anything else you'd want to do? Say, hey, you know what? I haven't done a rom-com or this or that. Or are you just using the template of the action film to be able to tell stories in a lot of different ways within the context of it being an action film?
The honest answer or the dishonest answer? The dishonest answer would be I love making action movies and I love action. I love the genre and I'm passionate to it. That's why I'm doing it. The honest answer is I want to tell big movies, and I don't care about action per se unless it promotes the story. And the only way that I've been able to continue my work in such a regular manner is by directing films that have a high action content, because obviously the pedigree of being an ex-stuntman and having done a lot of action movies works very well. But I would love to do a picture that didn't have action in, and I would go out there and make a drama or a romantic comedy or a comedy and do that, because the challenge for me is not about, you know, where I put the camera and an explosion. The challenge for me is working with these actors and creating a chemical reaction on screen that is powerful enough to go through the screen and affect the audience member watching it, make them either throw their popcorn in the air, cry, laugh. Whichever you do, you've affected them in a way that they walk away from that movie. They've forgotten all of their troubles. They've forgotten all their stresses, their argument they had with their partner that morning, and they've been transposed somewhere for 2 hours, and they recommend it to their friends and they watch it at Christmas or whatever. You know, this is the height of what we want as a director and as a filmmaker. But I love action, and as I say, it has put my children through private school. So
there you go.
For the time being, it is where I go, because I love to work as a film director. But you know that. If you look at the careers of directors, people like John Woo was known for his comedy films until he made an action film.
Right.
You know, they said, why is this comedy director becoming an action film director in the West? We only know him as an action film director. There's many, many examples of that. You know, if you go through people like Billy Wilder or Houston or well, not so much Houston, because he was always a drama, but other directors who made a career doing a certain type of film and then surprised everyone when they did another. But
Scorsese or even Woody Allen, right?
Yeah, it's entirely those wonderful skills and that skill set that they brought from that other genre that made their outing in the next genre so interesting and so different and so idiosyncratic, which is what we all want. We all want to feel we've discovered a film for the first time. No one wants to watch a film that everyone else has seen first. We want to feel, you know, there's that wonderful feeling, you know, oh my God, I just, you know, like I get when I watch a lot of these Korean pictures, like Man from Nowhere or Bittersweet Life, and you're like, Old Boy, wow, how, you know, I was so upset after seeing Bittersweet Life that, because I just finished shooting a shootout, and I'm like, I'm so angry this guy did the shootout that I wanted.
Hey, that's not a bad problem to have, is it, Jesse?
No, as long as you have something.
So let me, for the audience, the name of the new film, One Ranger, tell us about where people can find it, et cetera, and anything else you want to mention.
One Ranger is no longer in theaters. It's streaming on multiple platforms through Lionsgate. It's on DVD and Blu-ray. I suggest watching the DVD and Blu-ray because it comes with a phenomenal behind the scenes that's really, really good. It gives a lot of insight into how the film was made, the people that made it, some of the things we went through to make it. And when you see a picture like this, you're not looking at a movie that's cost the deficit of a small country. You are looking at a film that was handcrafted on the budget of the coffee bill from John Wick, you know, the coffee espresso. Yep. And there's something interesting about that. In the old days, you'd go to Blockbuster, you'd have the choice of the different rack. You'd have the cinema, you know, the movies that were in the, you know, coming from the big corporate chains, and then you'd have the indie films, and often you'd be drawn to those indie films because of something different, because it spoke to you in a different way from the cover or the cast or the you know, the tagline on the back. We don't have that opportunity anymore. Everything is given to us through you know, a limited number of streaming services, and they're all judged accordingly. And I think that's a sad thing. I think we should be able to, you know, enjoy B movies in the same way that we enjoy A movies. In the old, you know, the olden days, the golden days of cinema, you'd have an A release, you'd have the B movie underneath. And a lot of the time, the B movie is better. They were directed by the Peckinpahs, the Don Siegels, the Samuel Fullers, the Bud Boedekers. These guys went on to be fantastic A movie directors, but it was their B movies that got people interested because they told a story in a way that couldn't be told. So I would say, go see One Ranger.
All right.
Active indie action making and enjoy yourself, you know, disappear for 2 hours.
Well, I can see why you're so prolific. You're so full of passion. Your movie making is terrific and it's real. It's authentic and very honest. So congratulations on all your success, Jesse V. Johnson. I hope you'll come back to Guys Guys Radio when you have another film or two or six out, because you've been so illuminating in terms of yourself, your story, and the process of movie making. I think our audience really loves that. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you for having me. Great questions. Really enjoyed it, sir.
Okay. Jesse V. Johnson.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It's Guys Guy Radio.
Wow, what a terrific conversation with one of the top action directors on the beat, Jesse V. Johnson. We talked about his new movie, One Ranger, starring Thomas Jane, about a veteran Texas Ranger who finds himself trying to solve an international terror case over in the UK. And it's a real fun story, and it's got a lot of action. And I think you'll enjoy it as well as Jesse's other movies. There's a lot of them. You can check a lot of them out on streaming services. I just saw one with Bruce Willis called White Elephant. And again, Jesse has six more in pre-production, and he's worked with some of the top names. He's got a couple of movies with this Russian actress, Olga Korolenko. And Olga is, I think, one of the emerging actors/actresses in the business now. So he's got Olga for two movies coming out, Aaron Eckhart, and so many others. So I think it's worth your time to check out Jesse V. Johnson's films. You'll really enjoy them. And he's a cool guy. And what did we learn from him? I think we learned a couple of things. One, if you have a dream, you want to get behind the camera, you want to be a director, you've got to stick with it and you've got to stay focused. And for Jesse, he started out as a stuntman. He got behind the camera, then he had to go back out and be a stunt person again. Then he got back behind the camera. So you got to really stick with it. I think the other thing we learned that Hollywood is it's a money business. It's not just creativity. It's all about the money. You look at all the credits at the beginning of a movie, you see all these different studios and all these different producers, and it's all about the money. And three, you really have to know how to tell a story. You have to know how to manage actors, and you need to know how to manage all the other people who have invested in the movie. So being a director is no easy job. So Guys Guys Radio, thank you so much. I love doing this for you. I love doing it for me because I'm learning at the same time. So Guys Guys Radio will be back next week. And until then, like I always like to say, guys, guys, finish first.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.